You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking Atlanta Braves with MLB.com's Braves beat reporter, Mark Bowman. Mark, you had a busy year last year with Cooperstown duty, and it sounds like you may have another busy year this year. There probably wasn't any doubt about John Smoltz, but how big a deal is it for the organization and for the people he played with to kind of complete that trio in Cooperstown?
It really is special. I mean, the Braves fans had a chance to celebrate the greatest era in the generation or in their franchise history last summer with Bobby Cox and Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux going in, and now John Smoltz returning this summer. I think a lot of it was, you know, so much fun for so many people last year. I expect the Braves to have another strong contingent there in Cooperstown to celebrate with Smoltz, and I know Bobby will be there and Glav, and I haven't gotten in touch with Maddux yet, but it wouldn't surprise me. You know, I really expect them to be there as well. You know, these guys were so close, and I think that's what I always would take away from having covered the three of them is that, you know, these were three of the greatest pitchers, not only of, you know, their own generation, but of all time. And they did so many things together, and there was never even a hint of jealousy. Yes, there was the competitive fire. You could see it with each of them. They're all highly competitive, but at the same time, they kept that spirit healthy. They fed off of each other instead of, you know, trying to, you know, while Smoltz might have seemed to be in the shadows of the other two at some points of their career, or Maddux is getting the Cy Youngs when Glavine had been the first one here. Maddux shows up and he gets three in a row right after that, and it kind of becomes the quote-unquote staff ace. There was never any animosity, never any jealousy. These guys truly were friends and remain that way, and I think that's what I'll always remember about, you know, their relationship and the success they had here.
Smoltz falls just a tick short of the other two guys on the big counting numbers, but I'm not sure anybody, save for maybe Mariano Rivera, can match him for memorable moments. Is there one, or are there two or three Smoltz moments that stand out for you? I mean, he was such a postseason guy, such a big game guy. Are there any of those that particularly stand out for you?
You know, I think that, you know, the postseason is what you remember him for. I remember, you know, one of his losses actually there in Game 4 of the 99 World Series there at Yankee Stadium. And, you know, his elbow is about to fall off. He ends up having Tommy John surgery the next spring. And he is just finding ways to pitch, and he competed, you know, throughout that game. You just saw that spirit. And obviously, you know, I was still in high school at the time, but, you know, everyone's going to always remember the Jack Morris game, the World Series game there, and he had some great starts against the Pirates. So, you know, just standing out some regular season games, some balls that just he went to go get along the third baseline. You just saw this incredible will to win, you know, and compete and have fun. A guy that just attacked, you know, attacked hitters, you know, tried to field his position, had the most fun. You know, I think he really wanted to play center field at some point. You know, he was hoping Bobby Cox would put him in there. Just a guy who just really loved to be out there on the baseball field, just like now. You know, he's not able to play baseball anymore, but when he goes out to a golf course, he takes that same spirit. He goes to the basketball court. He's, he's certainly one of the most, one of the figures that I would say that I feel privileged to have, one of the top figures I feel like, you know, had feel privileged to have been able to cover here, just because he's not only just a special athlete, a special person, and he's never lost that youthful energy, and he brings it to anything and everything he does.
I think I speak for everybody who reads and listens to you when I say I don't believe there ever actually was a time that you weren't covering the Braves. I think you made that up. But to shift gears a little and look at the 2015 squad. They've made a lot since we last talked, and this roster looks a lot different. Justin Upton obviously is gone, but Evan Gattis and B.J. Upton are still there. what's your anticipation of what this club does between now and when spring training starts? Do you think this is basically the roster they take, or do you think there's still a big move or two left to come?
I would say this, and you know, this is, you know, this is still early January here, and I'd say when the Justin Upton deal was done there on December 19th, I thought that there was still a chance. I'd say I was saying 60% chance that Evan Gattis would be dealt, and I think I'm now down to about 40% chance, and probably fading. I do think this is, you know, for the most part, this is the club that you're going to see. I do think they'll go out and get another starting pitcher to add to their rotation. They did deal with David Carpenter and Jason Shreve for Benuelos there from many Benuelos, high upside prospect there for the Yankees. I think Benuelos is still at least a year away, and so they will go out. They still have say about $10 million to spend on a pitcher. Now the question is, do you go out and try to find somebody through trade? The free agent market, I don't think that they're going to necessarily find the guy that they want. I think that the other option is, instead of spending all that money on one guy, last year you went out and you got lucky with an Aaron Harang. Now, they pursued Aaron Harang to some extent this year, not really, as you can see with Aaron Harang signing a one-year, $5 million deal with the Phillies. The Braves, obviously, they didn't go that high, quite that high with their offer. They were looking for another bargain deal. But let's say this. Maybe if you go out and sign a couple pitchers for $2 and $3 million deals, bring them to camp, or maybe one guy for $2 or $3 million deal, find a couple other guys, sign them to a minor league contract and try to get lucky, again, like you did with Aaron Harang. Or do you spend that money on a more proven or a guy who may have better odds of succeeding this year? The question is, where do you spend that $10 million? And I think right now they're still looking to try to find one of those guys that can take a considerable portion of that money. But at the same time, you know, if they don't find that, then maybe the other option is go out there and bring a few guys to camp, compete for that fifth spot.
When you do that math, excuse me, are you accounting for A.J. Pierzynski? Are we considering that a done deal at this point, or is that still not completely done?
I believe that deal will be done. In all honesty, I think that A.J., that deal should be getting done. The Braves have kind of delayed some of their stuff this week just to make sure that nothing overshadowed John Smoltz's entrance into the Hall of Fame. I do say here within the next day or two, the A.J. Pierzynski and Jason Grilley deals will be done. So, yes, I'm accounting for that money there. And that's where you're looking somewhere $9 to $10 million range still left to spend there.
And how exactly does Pierzynski fit in? I mean, it's potentially a really interesting sort of classic platoon when you got a left-handed offense first guy and a right-handed defense first guy. Does he become the primary catcher? Is it a timeshare? How exactly is that going to work out?
I think that Bethancourt is certainly going to be the primary catcher. And they're bringing A.J. in to be the mentor. And, when they agreed to the deal with A.J., I wrote that he was one of the most polarizing figures in baseball. And I'm sure I'm not first to write that. But, you know, you just go back 1 year. He went to the Red Sox. I know some of the guys in the Red Sox clubhouse. He obviously was not a good fit there. He wasn't very well liked. They had a lot of veterans in that clubhouse. He went to St. Louis, where there are some veterans there, obviously some established players, with Molina and Holiday and Wainwright, the likes. But it seemed to be a better fit there. Maybe there were enough other younger guys that he was able to that seemed to take to his approach, to his personality, which sometimes can be taken as brash. It is amazing, though. You feel like you talk to one guy and they say, I like him. And the next guy, they didn't like him. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of fit he is here in this clubhouse, where, you know, clubhouse leadership was lacking last year. You know, is he willing to come in here and start to show what is still a relatively young team, you know, some of the ways to approach the game, the ways to prepare for games, that kind of stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits. I personally have never been around him on a daily basis, but, like I said, people that I respect, people that I like in this game. One guy says he likes him, the next guy says he doesn't. So I know John Hart has a relationship with him dating back to their AJ went to high school in the Orlando area, and you know, John has known him, you know, throughout those years. So maybe it'll be a good fit, maybe it won't. But the one thing I will say is Christian Bethencourt, his effort level has always been questioned over the last few years. If you can get a guy to come in here and kick him in the rear a few times, maybe that's exactly what Bethencourt needs.
All right. Well, Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks everybody for listening.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.